Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome to the KE Report. This is kind of an offshoot of KER Politics, talking about, though more, what I would have to say, KER self-improvement. I have Dr. Chuck Page on the line with me right now. You know, Chuck, in my particular world right now, we have a lot of very unhappy people. All people do when they turn on the television, when they read their newspapers, is hear about fatal shootings in cities all around the country. We're getting fatal shootings in our area. That is depressing people. People are very unhappy about what's going on with the current administration, the way they are, for lack of better terms. Dealing with what's going on in the economy, both from an economic standpoint and also from a societal standpoint. From an economic standpoint, people are very concerned right now. From a societal standpoint, people in my neck of the woods are very concerned, and I know my listeners are very concerned right now. How do you deal with that, Chuck?
Wow, that is $1 million question. Let me answer this very simply. You know, everyone needs something to do. They need a purpose. They need someone to love. They need someone to invest their lives in. And they need something to hope for. And I think if we focus on those things, I mean, the people that I see who seem to thrive in their challenges are people who have all of those things. You know, we have something to do, we have a purpose in life, we have something to hope for, and we have someone to love. And so I think as we do that, I think often we can deal with our depression and deal with all the other crazy stuff that we're seeing, you know, in the media and what's happening in our culture. So, you know, for example, I know a person, he's a very close friend, and he doesn't have any purpose. He sits around all day long and he gets on his, you know, his device and lives in this virtual world instead of finding something to do, whatever that may be, a hobby or, you know, and he doesn't really have necessarily anybody to invest in. You know, it's all kind of self-focused. I think, you know, if we can just do those two things, you know, begin to find somebody that we can invest in, that we can encourage, that we can whatever, somehow make their day better, even with our words or anything simple, I think that begins to help us to begin to look outward instead of inward. You know, of course, you know, me being a Christian, I know that I have the ultimate hope. You know, my faith in God gives me hope that, you know, even though things may seem kind of messy right now, in the long term, in the big picture, it's all going to be okay. It's kind of like sometimes watching a sports game, you know, and you maybe one that's already been pre-recorded, you know the outcome, you know who's going to win, but you're in the middle of a game watching your team really make some big mistakes, and you're wondering how it's all going to match out. And I think we have to sometimes take a step back and look at the end outcome, and knowing that at least from my worldview and from what I know to be true, it's going to be okay because God's in control.
Well, I have to tell you, that's the one thing that's helping me right now. I was a little bit taken aback when you said you got to have somebody to love. I just lost the person who I loved for 47 yep. years, you know, and what I have done is, and I think your faith is really important, in the sense that you have to realize that God is in control and that the Lord really does not want us to be unhappy. In the Bible, it states both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, God wants us to prosper and be happy. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, just think about this, though, Al. You've had a huge life change. And, I mean, you know, once again, a relationship that you've had for years. But yet, in a sense, you're making positive steps. I mean, you're here doing this radio show encouraging people. You're finding someone to love, you know, and I think that's the key, you know. Often, you know, when we go through any kind of loss, you know, even what's happening in our culture, or, you know, people with feel like they're losing control of just everything, you know.
Right.
When we focus on finding someone else to invest in and someone else to love, you know, it really helps us emotionally. I mean, that's the great thing about Christianity is real. So when we have this hope and we invest this in folks, you know, I think our days are a little brighter, and just like what you're doing, you know, yeah, you went through a difficult life change, man, just a tough life experience, but you're still finding a way to give a little something, you know. And as we, and that's the dynamic of faith. As we give of ourselves, we get a little back. You know, not that that's our motive to do that, but we do get things back. We do get a little encouragement. We do get the feeling of satisfaction and purpose and stuff.
I totally agree, Chuck. You know, I actually love the bloggers on my who are associated with the radio show. I have been away from them for a month or so simply because I am trying to get my emotional life straightened out after having lost my wife. But I have to say, I'm going to be back with those guys and gals for one simple reason, and that is because I love them, and I hope that this particular blog gives them the ability to vent emotionally with what they're unhappy about and to give some ideas that would make them happier, for lack of better terms, because they know they are accomplishing something. In spite of the fact that the news is pretty bleak right now, they know that they are accomplishing something. They are putting their opinion out there and very definitely accomplishing, at least giving people ideas what they can do to chip in and help make society better. Chuck, I have to tell you, and I'm going to give the mic back to you here. I have to tell you, I don't even watch the evening news anymore. It has gotten to be so depressing, in my opinion. You got the last word, sir. We've got 2 minutes here.
Show me your focus, I'll show you your future. And so often, we get so focused on the media and, you know, kind of the reality that we're trying to create, and we just need to go back to the basics, I believe. You know, once again, we all need something to do, we all need someone to love, and we all need something to hope for. And so, you know, that's, I think, what life is really about. And so maybe it means, you know, and I've learned this with my family too, I mean, I have limited time, turning off the TV and not watching a movie and just sitting down and just talking, or writing a letter, or texting someone, or doing something that gives us all three of those components. I think that will keep us out of, I think that will help us when we have those depressive emotions that, you know, race through our minds.
Well, it's pretty easy right now, and this is what I'm trying to prevent. It's pretty easy in it's pretty easy in society right now to have negative emotions. You know, I have to tell you, I've been involved in AA now for almost 3 months, and I have to say, some of the most happy, for lack of better terms, satisfied, inquisitive people who I have ever met are people who have the challenge of alcoholism. When you say, show me your... I can't remember.
Focus.
Show me your focus and I'll show you your future. That is very, very true within the alcoholic community. Chuck, always a pleasure. I'd like to chat with you again shortly. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen. We will be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continuing on with Chuck Page. Chuck, I want to discuss the subject of show me your focus and I'll show you your future. But before we do that, I know you're getting very active in the media. Tell my listeners exactly what you're doing in that area, would you?
Well, so I'm working on a show called Life's About Living, and it's just about people. It's hearing people's stories. There's always things that we can learn from people, from their faith experiences, from their life challenges, from everything. And so that's what I'm working on. I'm working on writing a book that kind of discusses the way we see things. You know, we can see things through victim lenses. We can see things through zero lenses, you know, feeling that our responses are inadequate, or we can see things through hero lenses, thinking that our responses are always adequate, or we can see things from a bigger perspective through God's lenses. And so that's what I'm trying to do in my life, is see things on that big picture, you know, and I think it all fits. You know, one of the great things about the Christian faith is that, you know, it really explains those three things we were talking about. You know, someone, you know, something to hope for, you know, someone to love and a reason to love someone. You know, a lot of other worldviews don't really give us any purpose or meaning, you know, so that means something to me. And so that's what I'm trying to convey to people. You know, so often in with my faith, we're way up here and our culture is way down in a different level.
Right.
So trying to explain things in a simple way, you know. So, but, you know, it's all about focus. And I'll tell you, I think we're all challenged with this in our kind of our nanosecond technological culture. We're so, you know, we're so focused on, you know, what's happening in the world and the media. And we often get so, I guess, just caught into that we kind of lose perspective of ourselves and just the basic things. You know, our focus determines our future. And so sometimes just kind of turning off the media, turning off the dial, and trying to do something purposeful with people that we know or people that we feel like that we can encourage in a way. I think that's what really gives us meaning and purpose. And so that's what I'm trying to do in my personal life, is turn off the TV, not have so much media. You know, I have, you know, like you, I have to be in the media a little bit, but trying to limit that. I mean, I need those times of doing things that feed me personally and encourage me personally.
Chuck, let me ask you a question. Now, you need an audience. Okay, to be effective in what you would like to do, you need an audience. How are you providing that audience for yourself and your future?
Well, I mean, that's something that's still in evolution. I mean, I'm a guest on shows. I mean, I have my TV shows. I have a website, charleswpage.com. I have a YouTube channel. So, you know, which you can find there. We have the Life's About Living show that's on a lot of different venues. So, you know, something I did really interesting this summer is I wrote a children's book with my oldest daughter. She's graduating and going to college, and it was something that we did together. And, man, it's just been one of the most meaningful things I think I could have ever done. Even if no one else reads the book, you know, Al?
Yeah.
You know, it was something meaningful that I did that I think my daughter will have good memories of this someday, if I haven't drove her crazy
yeah,
with my obsessive compulsive personality. But, you know, just, you know, focusing on the people that we love or the people that we feel like that we can influence in our lives, I think that makes all the difference.
I think you're 100% right. I really have to be concerned about that right now with two of my daughters. They're going through a pretty rough time right now. And by focusing on them, doing the best I can for them, providing the best example that I can possibly give for them, I think is a gift. God gave me that idea, and that's a huge gift, and I think in that way I can certainly help my family, too, my kids anyway. Having said that, Chuck, show me your focus, and I'll show you your future is very, very important. I want to get down to basics here right now. I want to say that one thing that I think really should be out of a person's focus right now is anything that does not make them feel perhaps more optimistic. Now, you and I need to focus a bit on what's going on in society because that's what we deal with. I think a lot of other people also need to focus on society, and here I'll disagree with you just a little bit. I think you need to read the newspaper, and you need to watch, I would have to say, the visual media, i.e. television, because you have to know what's going on. But you have to realize what you can do to make it better. And what I feel, Chuck, that you and I can do to make it better for people is simply to provide information and on what is going on and to provide information on ideas
yep.
that they can make, that they can implement to make things better. You want to elaborate on that, Chuck? We got 2.5. We got 2 minutes and 15 seconds, bud.
I agree with you, but we have to keep a balance. And so often we just, man, I mean, it's just like we just get caught in this virtual reality,
right?
This, you know, in the media, and we lose contact with what is real and what is not real. And so, I think we have to have a balance with the media. Yes, I agree. We need to be up on you know, current issues. We need to be aware of these things. But we also need to not forget that, you know, we need to keep our feet on the ground, too. And I think that's kind of what's happening. It's so easy just to get consumed and overwhelmed by things that we're hearing. And we get so emotionally connected to things, taking a step back and realize sometimes we're getting out of focus with the media and with things. And, you know, and just kind of getting back to focus. I need to have something to hope for, someone to love,
right.
And I need to have something to do. And if we keep it in balance, you know, and once again, something to do. Like you said, there are a lot of ways that we can make a difference in our world. And you know, but we have to kind of, we can't stick our head in the sand, but we also need to, you know, to keep a good balance with it. I wish I could articulate that better, Al, of how to do that. But I think it is possible.
I think it is, too. I want to give my audience a promise right now, and that is I have a weekend coming up where I will have a bit of time, quite a bit of time, actually, that I can devote entirely to the blog. Please comment on what Chuck and I are talking about right now. It's very important to me in particular, and I know it's very important to Chuck. I have an obsession with trying to help society. I promise you right now, I will spend 2 or 3 or 4 or even 5 hours on the blog, all of the input that you're giving, and I'll focus some editorials around that. Chuck, thanks, bud.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of the KE Report. No politics this time, or very few, if any. Going to talk a little bit about the investment environment, the economy. I'm very concerned about that. I'll tell you why I'm very concerned, but let me first introduce my guest, Rick Ackerman of Rick's Picks. We feature him on the site. Rick is really a good guy. I've only known him for about 30 years. Rick, I went to buy some, you know, people are talking about inflation right now. I went to buy some dog food for my pooch the other day, just a couple of days ago. I just about fell on the floor when they told me how much it was. My price a couple, 3 weeks ago was $42 a case. I had to part with $52 this time, which, I mean, we're talking 25%. Is that a comment on inflation? I mean, I asked the woman in the veterinarian facility. I said, "What's going on here?" And she said, "They just raised their prices to us. by 25%. Let's start out. Let's talk a little bit about inflation, Rick. It's kind of scary to me. Where are we at right now?
Well, first, Al, thanks for inviting me on. It's always a nice opportunity to connect with your audience.
Thank you.
Concerning inflation, the business with the dog food is interesting. You know, I used to be a newspaper editor, and if I were still working at that job, I'd probably send a reporter out, and I would say, find out why the price of this dog food just increased by 25%. And, you know, my first instinct is that that everybody with something to sell smells blood in the water. You know, we've got this inflation drumbeat going, and this follows a long, long, decades-long period of deflation where what you read suggested that everybody with something to sell was scared to death to raise the price because they knew they couldn't pass it on to customers because there's just so much competition out there for everything. You know, even groceries where the profit margins are under 2 cents on a dollar. So now, you know, the press, the shills in the press are doing the grunt lifting here, and there's such a loud drumbeat about inflation that even the dog food manufacturers are saying, screw it, you know, let's just jack the price to high heaven and see if people will pay it.
Well, let me give let me give you one more example. Okay, I have been for the last couple of months doing my own grocery shopping. Okay, last week, not this last week, but the week before last, my total bill was $83, and that included basically the same things I bought yesterday at the local Fred Meyer store. 83 went to 100 and a quarter, Rick, and I bought virtually the same things.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I'm seeing it pretty much everywhere I go to. Every little thing that you buy, even when you go to a ball game or something, the prices are way up for everything, especially little items. You buy a pack of Lifesavers and it's $2.
Right.
And but I just it's in a way it kind of reminds me of what happened when gas prices first went above $2 a gallon at the pump and then $3. And I used to write, well, this is going to certainly kill the economy. It did nothing.
Yeah.
It did nothing. And when you raise the price of gas from $3 to $5 in a place like California, you discover it still does nothing. So it means that there's really enough money out there jangling around that people will pay whatever they must for essentials. And at some point, it has to take its toll on the economy if either of two things happen. Number one, wages don't keep up with it. Or number two, we have a collapse in asset values that would come from a bear market in stocks.
Yeah.
But for the time being, the much higher prices, you may feel them, Al, but you're not at the level of income where it's comes down to really hard choices. You just pay it and grin and bear it. But there is a big segment of the economy that really does feel it, and I question whether we can have a continuing run of prosperity if a large swath of the economy is almost literally starving.
Well, I gave three examples, Rick. You know, dog food, number one, in a specialty store. Groceries, number two, in a grocery store that's known for low prices. Gasoline up here, I mean, I've got a car that I have to put unleaded ethyl gas high grade in, you know, and I'm paying a hell of a lot more than I paid last year for that. At least I'd have to say 25%. Now, I want to take this over to income investments, and I want to start out with the government now. Right now, interest rates are pretty low, and the reason they're pretty low is because purely and simply, if they go any higher, the federal government of the United States of America will not be able to service their debt. When that happens, I think you're going to see a rather serious and loud explosion in the economy. Comment on that, would you, Rick?
Well, it's not just the government that's going to be subjected to that turn of the screw if interest rates ratchet up 25 or 50 basis points. It's literally quadrillions of dollars worth of borrowing that are essentially leveraged or arbed off low interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal government's problems I won't say a small piece, because their liabilities include Social Security and,
right,
and the Medicare and Medicaid systems, but you know, the point that I make as a deflationist is that interest rates do not have to rise to cause the chief symptom of deflation, which is an increase in the real burden of debt.
Right.
The same thing can happen if asset prices fall. And that's what we saw in 2007 and 2008. Or you may have had a mortgage payment that was, the interest rate was historically low, but when you saw the price of your home falling by 10% per, more than 10% a year,
yeah,
and a lot of homeowners were underwater, that made a 4%, 4.5% mortgage a crushing burden.
Yeah.
So that's what I think is coming. You know, we really don't need rising interest rates to literally asphyxiate all debtors, including the U.S. government.
Yeah. Well, I got a couple of questions on that, or a couple of comments, Rick. One of the comments is that it's very, very important to the Democrats. They think they now have and will have into the future the control of America. If we have economic problems, and if the Republicans can put somebody forward in 2000 or whatever the next election is, 2400, I would have to say that the Democrats will probably get booted out of office. And that's why I continue to be optimistic about my investments in the conventional market. They're very important to me, Rick. Obviously, at my age, they're very important to me, critical. But I am kind of comfortable right now in the sense that I think the federal government, they've done some pretty silly things so far, and I think they're going to continue to goose the economy. Rick, I want to talk about this more in the next segment, which we're going to roll into here in just about, 40 seconds. I want to talk a little bit for 40 seconds about your newsletter, Rick's Picks. I've been reading it for almost 30 years. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to tell you, this guy is right on. He is passionate about his newsletter, Rick's Picks. He is very, very transparent in terms of his investments. Rick Ackerman is purely and simply a decent human being, and I'm very, very proud to have him on the KE Report. Quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. Time for the last segment of the KE Report. I'm talking right now, perhaps just a skosh, a little bit about politics, but I'm talking about my feeling that the government right now, at least until after the election, and I would probably have to say 2020, that election, the interim, I would have to say that the federal government is going to continue to support what I would call goose an economy that is in trouble. Rick, your comments on that?
Well, that's true. It's inflate or die right now. And Congress, I'm not going to lay this all on the Democrats either, because
okay,
it's really bipartisan. They only differ on the bottom line. But, we're in a kind of a surreal zone where we've got these landlord subsidies going out to people in the form of unemployment bonuses and this and that. And you can see that's everywhere you live. You can see it's killing the local economies. Probably two-thirds of the places that I buy things from or restaurants where I eat They've shortened their hours because they just can't find help. And of course, the sole reason for that is because the government, to an extreme, has disincentivized work. So, you know, it's sort of the same. You can't get anybody to shovel your lawn, shovel the snow from your walk or mow your lawn. And that's extended now to the bigger, much bigger picture. So the government, they're not even pretending that we need support, and the Fed is on board for that little charade too. It's like, we'll just keep stimulating, even though statistically there's not a good case to be made. The Fed is saying, we don't want to take any chances, we'll just keep sending out those checks. And of course, they've created a universal belief in the free lunch, but trust me, all the money that they're showering consumers with at this point is going to have to be paid for at some point. It all is coming from, it's originating in debt. There's debt created when these dollars are mailed out.
Of course they are.
And believe me, it has a cost. And that goes back to something that C.V. Myers wrote in his book, The Coming Deflation.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I've repeated over the last 30 years, maybe 1,000 times. But Myers said that ultimately, every penny of every debt must be paid, if not by the borrower, then by the lender.
That's
so
right.
Just a good example, most people think that if they get behind on their mortgage payments, they just leave the keys in the mailbox and bail out, and so the debt is forgotten. But it's not forgotten by the creditors. They're
no.
going to pay every penny of that the value of that house off if they don't sell it.
That's right.
And they may have to sell it at a low price, which is where you get deflation. And another example would be the student loans. We've been in sort of a wink-wink game for 4 or 5 years about, oh, you know, we'll eventually forgive it all. And it's been kind of a slippery slope because not everybody, in fact, only a small minority was on board for just blanket forgiveness of all student loans. It just doesn't seem fair to people who work their tails off to pay for college. So here are the politicians saying, oh, we'll just forget $1.7 trillion of debt. Well, the fact is, the moment that's forgotten, whoever the creditors are, meaning the people who bought bonds that paid for these student loans, they're out all that money. Every
that's
penny
right.
of that $1.7 trillion is going to be paid by lenders. And the more you continue to stiff lenders like that, the less willing they're going to be to lend. And that's why in the coming deflationary crash that's coming, it's going to be very painful if we should even try to hyperinflate our way out of it, which is the same thing as saying, let's screw all the creditors.
Right.
You know, let's have some sort of debt jubilee. Well, you can trust that the creditors, meaning the whole banking system, is not going to be that keen on making loans for the next 100 years. So if you try to inflate your way out of a debt hole, you're going to essentially destroy the institutional conduits of lending.
Right.
Deflation at least has the virtue, if you can call it that, of visiting the pain on borrowers in accordance with the extent of their sins.
Rick, let's get down to bottom line here. Let's get down to basics. There are a lot of people who are invested, a lot of people in my demographic who are invested in the economy for their, I would have to say, livelihood for the rest of their lives. Now, I agree from a fundamental standpoint. I don't think this economy can continue to be strong forever. And I thank God that I have an investment advisor who agrees with me and who's constantly looking for alternatives. But let's put a time frame on this. And I'll tell you what, I'll stick my foot in my mouth first. I would say that once the Democrats get comfortable with the strength of their position, which could be after the next interim election, I think you're going to start seeing explanations coming from the executive office and Congress as to why the economy needs to continue to or start to significantly rebuild because the investment climate stinks. You got to comment on that, Rick?
I think the problems that we've created for ourselves up till now, or at this point, go beyond politics. I don't think there's a political solution, and it's not a question any longer of Democrats or Republicans, who inherits the mess and what they're going to do with it. There is no way out, and I think that a deflationary collapse lies ahead, and it's as inevitable as the next bear market, and that's really what's going to happen. A bear market will be the essentially ground zero of the deflationary shock, and it's going to set things in motion that will happen too quickly to inflate out of. The Fed can only do so much monetizing, but I think in the implosion that's coming, they're going to have a hard time adding zeros to the ledger. Yeah. Faster than they're getting wiped off. So I'm not even looking for any kind of political solution, because we've grown too completely dependent on cheap credit, and we've gotten in a hole that can't really be fixed.
Rick, I agree with you 1,000%. I'm looking right now, we're down to about 2 minutes. I'm looking right now for just a gut level feeling for time frame that this could happen. I said I think it could happen after the next interim election. What does Rick Ackerman think?
I would just say that we're overdue. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen in a year or 2 years. I've lacked the imagination to see just how extreme the absurdities could become in terms of how much we owe, and the amounts that the federal government is borrowing, and the size of the essentially worthless assets that the Federal Reserve is carrying on its books, the quote unquote high quality collateral. So it's anybody's guess, but I really think that the bear market's going to be the event that triggers it, and there's no doubt really about the fact that bear markets happen.
Yeah,
you've got some forecasters out there saying, screw it, you know, this boom is going for another 10 years. But I think they're not cognizant of the fact that we'll be launching off what is already a hugely inflated bubble. So I don't see another 10 years of this, not by any stretch, but I'm kind of done picking tops. It's going to happen in October the same way all disasters happen, including the crash of 29.
Right.
I don't know. The more you get fixated on that, the less it's likely to happen. But a bear market is coming, and it's long overdue.
Rick, the only comment I can make is I thank God every day that I've got an investment advisor who's pretty skookum on this stuff, because I agree 100%. I don't want to be at my age and have to try to live off a couple of pensions and Social Security. I'm not in that position that I can do that. Ladies and gentlemen, we've gotten as accurate as we can in our predictions. Hope you enjoyed the show. I enjoyed putting it together. Thanks, Rick.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.